Give it just a moment.
This conference is being recorded. Only the main conference is recorded.
All right.
Conference recording has stopped.
Issue
we have an issue with the recording today, so we may not have a recording for this call, but we'll go ahead and proceed. Remind you that all of the calls are muted for this call. We will unmute for Q&A at the end of the call. So hold your questions for that time. We have accumulated so many Q&As at this point. Rather than issue a Q&A for the last week's call, we're going to do a summary document that summarizes all of the Q&As and issue those and then update that with categories for the topic areas that have been covered. We think that'll be a more useful tool for everyone, and so we're working on that. We continue to provide consults for any provider that has a question about infection control, about what the current policies are, about the various emergency rules. If you have a question, give us a call. That number is 405-271-6868. Or you can, and better yet, send an email to LTC, that's long-term care, LTC@health.ok.gov. And we can get you a response or a call back. So you can send an email and say, I need to talk to someone, and then we can set up the time to call you back. The folks that are working in that consulting role are working from home, so that actually will work out better. We continue to maintain a website, and actually we've been working for some time on updating that website, but we are pushing the information that we have to our website, and that is ltc.health.ok.gov. Today's agenda was emailed out shortly prior to the call. We understand there's a little bit of a lag in folks getting the emails, so look for the agenda in your email or your spam list if you didn't see it. And so with that, I've got Paula Terrell with me and Pam Caldwell and, of course, myself. Janine's not able to be on the call with us today. And Mr. Cook is sitting on a CMS call, which we'll talk about a little in more detail later on. But it is CMS, CMS has come out with policy on visitation, and we're going to talk about that. So we've got the CMS guidance on reopening nursing homes. And in your agenda today, you have links to those documents, the press release and the FAQ that was issued with that document. So that leads us right into one of our first topics was questions about visitation and various scenarios for visitation. And would it be allowed outside? Would it be allowed, outside with social distancing and masks, et cetera? I believe we will have detailed guidance that tries to factor in all of these different scenarios for visitation. But I will tell you that the CMS guidance for presumably in-facility visitation, and again, we're trying, that's part of why Mike's on that call. There's lots of questions that have come up about that guidance. And it's, but it relates to across the spectrum of how we manage visitation and trying to be consistent across provider types while at the same time recognizing there are some distinctions between our providers and the populations they serve. So the questions about some different visitation strategies that were provided, the answer is not yet. We do not have specific guidance to authorize visitation in visitation scenarios right now. I like the thinking behind the questions of, doing something outside with masks and social distancing, some different kind of scenarios that can be employed that allow some connection. So I appreciate the creativity and looking at options, and I'm optimistic that we're going to find some kind of accommodation that allows us to recognize that, but at the same time recognizes all of the other factors that we do have to consider. So we'll be issuing guidance for after June 1st, which is when we shift into our next phase. Go ahead, Pam.
I'm going to try one thing manually, James.
All right.
You might hear beeps on the other end, and I hope nothing bad happens, like a disconnection, but I should be able to manually control this and start recording. I'm not sure whether AT&T is having some issues. You'll hear a couple of beeps. So they're having issues, it sounds like, because that should record.
It changed from start recording to...
This conference is being recorded. Only the main conference is recorded. Conference recording has stopped.
Nope.
For some reason, AT&T is having issues. We apologize.
Maybe their computer has the COVID.
It's probably their conferences are overwhelmed by the amount of calls they're having.
Yeah. See, we're at 357 today. We're actually down a little bit. 357 callers. Okay, so the governor's executive order did go back and I had that just a moment. We've talked before about the governor's executive order and its status, and that was updated. And in the most recent update, they had the stay-at-home provision for people age 65 and older, and those who have serious underlying medical conditions. That stay-at-home was going to lift on May 15th. That's been changed to May 31st. And then the prohibition on visitation is extended through the end of the month as well. So pass that on. I'll stop there. Next question was, can we use plastic portable table dividers for communal dining? So we have not made a change on the guidance for communal dining at this point. It still remains restricted. There are provisions for communal dining in scenarios that where you have population management issues or you have to provide support or supervision for the dining with the recommendations that we've discussed previously for social distancing and for staggering the dining for those that where you do still need to manage through your dining area. So as far as the table dividers go, I can while we have no specific guidance, I will tell you that we looked at something along those lines for a trade fair booth, trade fair tables, and that suggestion of the separation of the barriers was not approved to reduce the distance of separation. So while it would be fine to have that, the guidance to maintain the social distancing at minimum 6 feet continued. So I'll say that. The next question is about all the assisted living facilities being tested. I don't have an answer yet. I have asked and asked again today. I don't have an answer for the extension of testing for our intermediate care facilities for individuals with intellectual disabilities or assisted living centers or residential care facilities. I do not have an answer. Next question is, and this one wins for most difficult question, but if an employee takes a relative to the doctor, so it's an employee taking a relative to the doctor, do they need to quarantine for 14 days? So this is your employee going to the doctor. I just recognize that. You were talking about an employee. So there's no requirement to quarantine your employees based on where they've been. The quarantine would be appropriate based on or restriction of duties and assignments would be based on an exposure. But just because they've gone to the doctor's office would not be the criteria for a quarantine. Paula, I didn't realize we were talking about this as an employee.
Yeah.
So pass that one back to that. You know, your employees are getting, you know, depending on what they're doing. That's why we're implementing the active screening every day and looking at doing more active testing, just to help us maintain the status of the employees out there. Okay, so the next question was, how do I sign up for the report from CDC? We embedded that in the agenda with the links. Take you back to the CMS memo. This is for the reporting required for our nursing and skilled nursing facilities to report to the CDC. It's the National Healthcare Safety Network. The links are in there, but if you go to www.cdc.gov/NHSN, that's Nancy Henry Sam Nancy, NHSN. /. So I'll say that again, www.cdc.gov/NHSN/. That's the page that will give you the instructions for your registration. Also see the CMS memo on this topic, which was QSO-20-29-NH. And if you just put that in Google, you will find it. Links to those that I just gave you are embedded in the agenda that just went out today. All right, so let's talk more broadly about the CMS guidance. And this guidance parallels a lot of the things we were already talking about in looking at visitation. But it goes further. So I'm going to talk about this in the context of its intended audience is nursing facilities and skilled nursing facilities. It is not for or defined for any other providers. So it is not written for the ICF IID. I want to be clear on that. So I expect that they will issue similar guidance there, but they have not as yet. But I'll review for everybody what's covered in here. And I remind you that in your agenda you have links to the press release, the guidance, and the FAQ. But the thinking here is what we all know, is that for our nursing homes and these elderly residents, because of their vulnerability, CMS is putting in additional criteria for nursing homes to go through phases of reopening. That are beyond, you know, what we're seeing for the general public, obviously, and that any nursing home will not advance until all the residents and staff have received results from a baseline test. So we are in the middle of covering that. I understand we will, I believe we are on track to complete testing in all of our nursing and skilled nursing facilities by the end of the month. So that is one of the criteria that CMS is putting in, is to do that baseline testing. Have that done for all the residents and staff. That survey agencies do an inspection. That's the COVID-focused survey in any home with significant COVID outbreaks, which we've been doing. We've covered that base. And they state that nursing homes should be the last to reopen within a community to ensure the safety of the residents. So the process outlined, like the president's national process, is in phases. So there's three phases or gates, if you will, that as a society we're all looking to move through, and it relates to consecutive weeks of declining hospital admissions, declining positive tests among the total percentage of positive tests, declining actual cases. So all of those things are factored in moving you through these different gates. And the statement in here is that the nursing homes then move through these gates. And so in this policy, it directs that visitation in the nursing homes will open up during phase three. when there's been a sustained decrease in COVID-19 cases. I'm not going to get too deep into the woods with the policy for this broad audience, but I'm going to give you a little bit of the detail. As we've discussed, there's the factors that come into this are case counts, how many cases there are, what's the status of the individual home, and then other local factors such as community transmission. No surprise to anyone, the provision for visitors is that when visitation occurs, it's going to occur with face masks and the cloth face coverings being worn. But the recommendation for relaxation is going to factor in the cases of COVID in your community, cases in the nursing home. Any nursing home that has a case, whether among residents or staff, is not cleared through gate one in this policy. All the cases have to clear first. So they have to make sure they've got the adequate staffing in place. As I mentioned, the baseline test for all of the residents. And then the biggest lift for all of us is that CMS prescribes weekly testing of all staff. And that's not surprisingly raised concerns across the country with how is that going to be done, how will that be paid for, et cetera. And Mike, I don't know if Mike will get back to us, I think, before the end of the call, and maybe he will hear something and be able to update us on that. But, for the residents getting the tests covered and reimbursed through various insurance mechanisms is one thing, but the staff is another matter. So for all of us, we're looking at just in our nursing homes in excess of 20,000 staff that would be tested every week. So that's a heavy lift, obviously, for all of us. So that's a factor for the facility to be able to, can they implement weekly testing of their staff? What is the ability to practice social distancing and do universal source control? That's, again, going back to the face coverings. What is the facility's access to PPE? Do you have sufficient face masks for your staff to continue that practice and other? And what is the hospital capacity? Is there sufficient hospital capacity to care for, if you will, a surge, should there be a surge? CMS emphasizes that states need to monitor these factors and that we can adjust the plan accordingly and or adjust for specific facilities depending on the local data about circulation of the virus in our community. So there's a lot of pieces to this. As for the nursing homes, in this guidance, it's a continuation to follow the guidance on infection control and what's been issued by the CDC, and that they follow any local or state directives, that there's not a broad recommendation. There's not a recommendation to open the facilities to visitors, except for the compassionate care situations we've talked about, until phase three of this. And phase three would be there have been no new nursing home cases in that home for 28 days. That would be through phases one and two. So each phase runs 14 days. The nursing home doesn't have staff shortages. There's adequate supplies, and this is kind of a restatement of what I covered before. There's adequate PPE. There's adequate cleaning and disinfectant supplies. And there's access to the testing for the staff for COVID-19 on a weekly basis. So I suspect there may be a number of questions that come up about this. I'll just tell you in advance that this came out yesterday. We're all digesting it. We are CMS did an FAQ. I went through the FAQ, and I've kind of summarized the FAQ in my comments today. Beyond that, Mike is sitting on a call right now. We're optimistic he'll come back to us and share some information that may provide some additional guidance. The model that they've laid out, you know, if you look at that, it's got a lot of good elements, and I think if testing were no issue for all of us, and we could get ready test and make that happen for all of our staff, for across the spectrum of all of our long-term care providers, that would, I think, give all of us a greater level of comfort moving forward. So there's questions about that and how that proceeds. There is some money that's been, as a part of the CARES, I believe it's the CARES Act that was pushed out for enhanced and expanded testing. So there's questions about the availability of those funds and how those might be used to support this. All questions that I do not have an answer for at this time. And so with that, we'll move into our operation and status updates. I can tell you that, or Paula, do you want to just take this and
okay.
I'll hand off to you, and that way I can stop talking.
So our provider training for 2020, which would have occurred this summer, has been canceled. Infection control consults, I'm not sure where we're going, but anytime you have questions or just want to talk something over with us, you're of course welcome to give us a call. And then also, I know that Janine Kitts, our infection control nurse, is also available. She's available to you by phone. And also, if you feel like you need some assistance out in your facility and you call her and talk to her, she does lots of on-site visits to also provide recommendations and look at your situation individually. We are still doing COVID-19 focused surveys. I've kind of lost track of where we are. We've done probably somewhere around 40 to 50 of those on-site in facilities. And then the task force is still out there working, and that is a collaborative effort with the county health departments and long-term care surveyors and epidemiologists who are going out to facilities. Some of the task force is doing the testing, or they may be coming out looking at situations in your nursing homes for you also.
On the task forces, I can go ahead and give a little bit more of it. So the task forces, as I mentioned, have largely completed most of the testing. One of the issues that emerged was a question about the terminology that we used in our guidance for the task forces and on employees that were refusing to test. And we used in our initial language that employee would be quarantined. And that was poor choice of words. We've revised that. We issued that back out to all of our task forces this week. It's not quarantine is a term that's used, you know, for suspected. In this case, it's the requirement is that the employee would not be put on a shift until they agree to testing. We provided in the guidance that the testing of staff is authorized. And we provided you that guidance that came out from, I wanted to say that was the EEOC, but I'm blanking on that. But that was a necessary or allowed requirement for the jobs for our healthcare providers. So there was a question about, well, if you put an employee on quarantine, well, then they would be qualified for sick leave or paid sick leave, and that's not what's at play here. What's at play is the testing is a requirement for the job, and if they do not agree for the testing, then they are not to be scheduled. And we've issued that revised guidance to the task forces to communicate to facilities where that was an issue. Along the lines of the task force, I'd say that, you know, we continue to provide the N95 fit testing in our facilities that have exposures. As soon as we get word of a new facility with an exposure, we are contacting, Paula has that, and she has a staff member reach out to the facility, talk them through the process, explain how that works. Basically, we ask, do you need it first? And if they do, then for who, what type of mask the facility already has. We get that information and we share it with our scheduler, who gives it to the vendor, and then the vendor starts working with the facility to and our scheduler to set up the time and make sure we know what kind of N95 mask the facility has, so that the vendor can confirm it's a good mask and they can do the fit test for it. So that's continuing. And then the other side of that is the cleaning. We pushed out the link. The National Guard is doing cleaning in nursing and skilled nursing facilities. That's the information that I have. I believe our intermediate care facilities for individuals with developmental disabilities. So we pushed out a link to through our network to those providers. I've seen some assisted livings reply that they would like that. I passed those on to the Guard, my understanding is they will not do an assisted living center. They will do licensed nursing homes. That is the orders that they were given and the direction that they have, and that's the scope of their authorization at this time. We sent out the email. If you're an ICFIID, a nursing facility or skilled nursing facility, and if you are interested in this, and the information we sent out, we gave you the link. They come in civilian attire. They clean your facility. They'll spend the half a day or a day, depending on the size. The links that we sent out shows the kind of what chemical they use and how it's been approved. You can see a video of what it looks like. They have a video of their efforts cleaning a VA center and what that looked like. So if you are interested in this, and you can say, I'm interested, and then talk. We'll pass your contact information on to the Guard, and they will call you and evaluate with you and talk to you about it. So you're not committed. You can just talk to them to say, hey, I might be interested. I want to talk to you. So if you are interested, send an email to ltc@health.ok.gov expressing your interest. I need three things. I need a contact name. I need your license number, not your CCN. I need your license number, not the name of your facility, because the name, people call their facilities different names. So contact name, license number, and a contact phone number, those three things. Send that to ltc@health.ok.gov, and we can forward that on and let you talk to those folks. That's what I have on the task force.
Okay. Reporting requirements. Just to go over it again, what you need to report to us is a resident or an employee who has suspected COVID, so that means they're symptomatic, and then we also need to know when a resident or an employee tests positive for COVID-19. And those that is a 24-hour requirement, so within 24 hours of finding out, you need to report that to us.
And that's it.
That's it.
All right. Well, we're moving through today. So, all right. Well, then we'll go ahead and open up the lines for questioning and see where we go.
Okay. You'll hear the instructions. Your calls will be taken in order, and you'll be able to speak when it comes to your turn, and then you'll be placed on mute again. I'm going to do this prompt, and let's hope it works.
This conference is now in question and answer mode. To alert the speaker that you have a question, press 1, then 0.
Takes just a minute. 9 questions. You want me to go ahead?
Yes. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I know you guys are still getting CMS guidance about the weekly testing of staff. I'm just wondering, is that for all states? We're negative. We don't have any COVID in our home, thank goodness. But we have a lot of staff that, one, feel it's against their God-given right to test, but they're going to do it anyway. But to tell staff in healthcare now that they're going to have weekly testing, we may have quite the shortage of staff. I'm just wondering how we're going to handle all that, if that's going to be a requirement.
So, thank you. And so a couple of, that is what I shared with you was CMS guidance for nursing and skilled nursing facilities nationally. That is the expectation nationally is weekly testing. It is, and so I'm sharing that to say that that's, there's not an answer for how that would be carried out, but that is the requirement that they are putting out, is that there will be testing done on a weekly basis for all the staff. You are absolutely right. It's okay. So the impact of that is, some staff may object to that, but we've got staff who are working for a highly vulnerable population, and we've seen what happens and how this can move through a facility and its impact, and so that's what's driving that guidance. So the other thing that I would say, and that we will be sending out, I think it may have already gone out in the link, we have a new test out that is it's called the mid-turbinate swab. I think we talked about it last week, but that's been put out. We're putting the spec sheet out that was issued on this. So it's basically you hand the swab to the individual, to the resident or the staff, and they swab it into their nostril, in each nostril. So it's a much less invasive process with high reliability. It's some encouragement there. And then the additional saliva testing remains pending. I haven't heard more on that. But I know the new nasal NARS swab is out there and being used by our task forces now.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to ask that for my staff. So.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I was calling regarding the CDC guidelines for the reporting, and I am currently unable to get access to my facility after going through the SAMS website and the NHSN website, and I was wondering what we could do about that, because they're going to start the fines.
So contact our office, and let's see if we can't talk you through the issues there. I don't know if they have an email or phone number, but if they have an email address, I would make sure you document that you sent an email asking for some clarification on what the issues are, so that you have that record. Make your phone calls and document your calls, but then contact us, and let's see if we can't see if maybe there's a glitch somewhere in that process.
Okay, who should I ask for?
Well, that's a fine question, since we haven't dealt with it before.
Actually, I've taken a few
questions. Oh, well, there you go. Paula just volunteered.
Yes, I am. I'll tell you, which number are you putting in? Are you putting in your NH number or your 375 number?
375.
Or 370.
Or 370, yeah. I'm sorry.
The 375 number.
I think it may be your NH number. Which one do they refer to as the CCN?
CCN is a 375.
It's a 375.
I think so. Yeah, it is.
Okay. Yeah. Try the other one and see if it works.
Did you hear that?
Did I try the NH for our NH number?
Yeah, you might try that one.
Okay, yeah, because it just keeps saying I don't have access to a facility.
Yeah. So there's a problem with that number.
Did she register?
And you registered first?
Yes, I've registered, it comes up into the screen where it says SNLTC reporting, and then it says the enrollment, and then I click on the enrollment to make sure I was enrolled, and I've been enrolled, but I can't report.
I would try that and see what happens.
Try the different number?
Yes.
Yeah, so you prepared your computer to enter. I'm going back through the instructions. You may need to change it. Okay.
Yes.
Registered your facility, registered with SAMS, all of that?
Yes.
All right.
I have with SAMS a couple of times, and they said everything is good through them. I've emailed the NSHN about 5 times, no response. I've called the CDC twice, and they don't know how to help me.
All right. So save those emails that you sent.
Okay.
So that you've got a record, and then give us a call. Let's see if we can't talk you through, see what's
is
going
it,
on.
Is it the 271-6868 or?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and I'll call you later after the call.
6046 is my extension.
So after you dial 271-6868, dial this extension.
56046.
56046.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. Are the temporary CNA classes, are they no longer active? Or can they not test for the CNA, the temporary CNA certification?
Okay, so there's not a test for temporary certification. There is a, so right now the testing is shut down because the career techs are shut down. So what we provided through our process, and you can go to NARS, NARS, Nurse Aid Registry, or is it NAR? I'll check that one. So have you gone through and done the check sheet for skills checks and all that?
We have. I just wanted to make sure that it was still available, and because we have gone to different phases, I just wanted to make sure that my girls will still be able to go on there and go through the checklist.
Yeah, so you worked them through the checklist, and you sign off and document that you've trained them. If
Correct.
You feel like they have completed everything to a point where they want to actually through the exception, then on the Nurse Aid Registry website, you can find information about how they can apply for an exception to go ahead and test.
Okay, and I just have one more other question. With storm season approaching, will we have a storm shelter down at another building? And with the building that we have, do we have everyone go to the storm shelter, or do we just have them go into find another safe spot?
Go ahead, Paula.
Well, I did hear a recommendation from someone, I think it was Janine, talking about trying to find, you know, the safest place in your building, like the center part of the building, like we would normally do, where you could probably still try to maintain some safe distance. But you're going to have to keep it safe anyway, I mean, you know.
Right. I just wanted to just get some clarification on it because we have the storm shelter. Do we move everybody to that storm shelter, or do we just kind of separate and keep the social distancing while we're trying to be safe from the weather?
Yeah. What type of facility are we?
What type of storm? Sorry.
We're an ICF facility, and it's like a tornado. When we have a tornado warning or, you know, anything like bad weather where we'll have to take shelter, do I take all my residents into one shelter, or do we still try to separate and find a safe spot?
Yeah. So in the event of a storm, and you've got an impending threat, all right, so you're going to do source control, you're going to put mask on everybody, And then you will be in a, you know, your ability to social distance will be limited, but it's the, you've got that competing threat.
Yeah.
So that's what you would do. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, caller.
Yes. My name is Adam Young. I'm the administrator for South Point here in Oklahoma City. We completed our facility-wide testing on May 14th, and we did about 460, 475 tests. I was just curious if you guys know or getting feedback as far as your time frame for getting those results back. I still have not heard anything. But also on that same note, the task force that came in was, I just wanted to give them a big shout-out. They are awesome. They were extremely efficient. They were very accommodating. It went wonderfully. So kudos to them.
So the and you have Brazil, Oklahoma City, is that right?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Okay. So thank you for that. We will pass that on to them. As far as the delay, we don't. I don't know why. If you have a contact with your task force, if you have the phone number, then reach out to them and just follow up with them. But you probably have already done that. So, but if you haven't, do that again and just explain, hey, I'm still wondering about my results.
Okay. Okay.
And we have a daily call with Oklahoma City, and so we'll ask them about it this afternoon.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I got a question. We base our screening tool off of the staff screening questionnaire that the Oklahoma State Health Department provided that first week of restricting a visitation. And
yes,
the question, if they answered yes to anything, we basically said you can't come in our building for 14 days as a precaution. And we've been COVID-free this whole time. But now that summer's upon us, and we have split families that one might live in Texas and one might live in Oklahoma. The question on the staff screening questionnaire states, have you traveled to another state or reside in a community where community-based spread of COVID-19 is occurring? How do we determine if they go to Texas to pick up their kids, if that's a yes, to allow them to work or not?
So we have a revised tool, so the fact that they traveled out of state doesn't matter at this point.
The virus hasn't changed.
Yeah, we've got, so I caller, I have your email. We looked at yours, and we have it revised. I thought it had been sent back, but apparently I've lost track of that, so we'll get that sent back to you, and then we're going to actually use that to push out as a screening tool for broader audience.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
James, they also have information on the CDC. They've revised their information where they can look and find all everything on there.
Oh, too. Okay. All right. So
they have a symptom tracker with new symptoms, and they also revised some of the temperatures. So that information is on the CDC website also that they can look at.
All right. So the form's revised to include all of the new symptoms. So that form has all of that, but Pam's reiterating that CDC has that symptom tracker and guidance out there. Is that under the nursing facilities or
probably under healthcare professionals,
okay. But we're going to issue a revised, an updated screening tool for everyone.
That'd be great.
Thank you
so much.
Go ahead, caller.
Hello. My question is there going to be a separation or a difference in the facilities that have not allowed the hospice providers in versus family visitors?
Yes. Hospice is considered a professional health employee, family and visitors. So this is Mike.
He's back. Yeah.
Yeah, because we have facilities that have refused all services.
Understandable. However, professional health employees are held to a different standard. They are to understand about donning, duffing, staying away from COVID-positive situations, whereas family members are not considered in that. So, I mean, a hospice person could have been treated just exactly like your own staff, and very well can be. However, CMS does not say that you cannot restrict everybody. So that's why we have seen some of them, some facilities allow them in, some facilities do not.
Okay, so it's up to, I'm an operations director for a hospice, and so it's up to each facility when they set their criteria for allowing our nurses and other workers back in?
That's correct.
Facilities have to evaluate that based on their circumstances and situation. There's, and again, you go back to the new guidance that's come in as we move through these different phases for our nursing, skilled nursing facilities. It talks about opening up some of that as well. So there may be some revised guidance on that that you'll hear in the next few weeks.
Okay, so the CDC may or is going to separate out the guidance and maybe allow those workers back in?
CDC already has guidance out there for healthcare providers.
Right, but they've opted not to do that.
Yeah, so we're talking about CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, is the guidance that we're talking about today, and allowing healthcare, external healthcare providers into the facility is a process that's evaluated with the facility, and what we have said is they can be allowed. There's an expectation across that's communicated to the hospice and home health folks, as well as the facilities, that screening and PPE, temperature checks, all of that is appropriate and can be allowed and occurred. But the facility is allowed to make that evaluation about what they can support and are comfortable to allow at this time. And so because there are provisions for telehealth, televisits, and different scenarios. So that's where that evaluation has been left to the facility to make.
Okay. Yeah, and we've run into some difficulty with the telehealth just strictly, and it's understandable with the staffing issues that the facilities are now having to deal with. I mean, basically right now we just stay in contact with our facilities 1 to 2 times a week, drop off the supplies, make sure their meds are filled. But I guess at this point that's all that we can do.
Yes, well, continue to work with your provider.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, caller.
My question is basically the same as another caller, but we're 15 days out on getting any results on our testing for our facility. And so basically that makes the whole batch of them invalid, in my opinion. Are there going to be any?
So would you send an email to ltc@health.ok.gov with that information for your facility and let us run that down for you?
Yes, I sure will. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. I run an independent and residential care community, and I'm just wondering about the salon. I know you've answered that question on previous weeks, but I'm wondering when I might be able to look at opening the salon up, knowing that it is in the common area of both the residential care and the IL.
So you're going to have an outside person coming in to your salon?
That would be correct.
Yeah. All right. Well, so it's so you're in one of the, so obviously for your independent living community, you know, you're going to look to the CDC guidance for that. For the resident care facilities right now, we've restricted to essential still, but we are we've been working on what we can do to accommodate, you know, and as we talked about before, you've got to look at what's the health condition of your population in your resident care facility. Do you have residents who primarily mental illness, or are there, you know, the underlying health conditions that we've talked about? And so you have to factor that in about, all right, opening that up. But right now, that's not considered an essential. We're still under the governor's executive order for our over 65 and people with chronic medical conditions that we've talked about, and that's to stay at home through the end of the month, and there's no visitation. And that the external visits into the facility are for the essential health medical services. So long answer to say, what you can do for your independent living community, it falls outside of that guidance, except if they're over 65 and have chronic health conditions that they're supposed to be staying in. There's obviously some opening that's coming, but we're not there yet.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Go ahead, Carl.
Hi, yes, my name is Lacey. I'm with an ICF IID. I had a question regarding the directive that when we bring in a new admission, we do the 14-day quarantine. And I was wondering if there was any type of directive if we did two negative COVID tests to be able to bring them out of quarantine earlier.
Paula, go ahead.
No, you can't do that. The 14-day quarantine is the incubation period for the illness, and so you need to wait the whole 14 days to see if they develop symptoms.
The two tests are actually for employees.
Okay, and what if the new admission came from a facility where they had two negative COVID testing?
Has nothing to do with that. As far as there's different standards for resident versus an employee.
Okay, and then, sorry, just to piggyback on that a little bit, is my understanding, and I could be wrong, as far as the if a resident has to go to an outside doctor's appointment, there was a question whether or not then they should come back on a 14-day quarantine.
That's correct.
So what is the difference in, because I know the question got asked earlier as far as an employee, that it was meant to be guidance for if it was an exposure, not just going to the doctor's office.
So it's professional health employees have, and hopefully all of your staff, have been educated on the importance of their own social distancing and protection and source control, that they are taking actions actively to protect themselves from being exposed. And so we're relying on that in that guidance that gives some broader leeway there versus otherwise.
See, our residents are taken with one of our staff members to a doctor's office, and we sanitize and mask before they leave here, and they're also going only directly to a facility where they're temped and masked there.
Okay. So you've got so you have
basically, I mean, we have control over their exposure. We're with them through the entire appointment. You know, we have limited outside appointments to the best of our ability, switch to virtual that we can, but we have some that require injections or pump refills, things like that.
Yeah.
Well, it's still the requirement, and the other thing is that resident who is going to see the doctor is more than likely going to be in much closer proximity to the doctor, to the nurse, to anyone checking vital signs than that employee is. So you just don't know what they're exposed to. They end up being an unknown status because we don't know really what their exposure is when they come back.
And if they're masked as well?
Yeah, and yep. you're hitting on what we all are aware of is that this is an abundance of caution because everyone's wearing masks, so we're doing the source control, and we all think, well, this should be okay, but the guidance right now remains, and again, I think we're going to be seeing some qualifications on some of this guidance, coming up in the next weeks. But right now, the guidance is if they go out to a medical office, then when you bring them back, you put them. Actually, it's not just a medical office, but you bring them back, it's quarantine.
Yep.
Thank you.
My question kind of goes back. Someone else already asked. We were tested on the 5th of May, and we still don't have any results either. So.
Okay. So, yes, so as we said before, shoot us an email with your information, and let us run it down for you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, caller.
Hi. My question is about the cost of these tests. If we're going to be testing our employees, someone said something about it being up to the nursing home to pay for. When will we get, the final rule on that? I mean, if they said, hospitals, no one should be out of cost, that's going to be a huge cost for these nursing homes.
You are absolutely correct. I'm aware of that. Yeah, and that was me that was made the comment about we looked at the guide. So, all right, Mike's back on the call. Mike, did they give any guidance about how staff testing was to be paid for?
I wouldn't say guidance, but they did say that the testing of staff can be paid for through CMS.
They did?
Yes.
Well, there you go.
Thank you so much.
With what Steve was talking about, that HHS bill.
Yeah.
So the nursing, CMS is aware of that cost, and I'll talk a little bit when we get to the end of these questions as far as what they said on the call, but in the recommended guidance, which is three phases, along with other comments, one of the biggest concerns is having a baseline for your resident and having a weekly test for any employees.
And I spent a lot of time talking about that.
I didn't know what y'all talked about. I didn't want to spend much.
I basically reviewed the press release and the FAQ that they issued and explained, and that's what they're talking about is, one of the big unknowns here was how are we going to test every staff? We're talking about upwards of 20,000 staff a week. How are we going to do that, and how is it going to be paid for? That was not made clear.
We have a lot of work to do. CMS is really not coming out and saying it's cookie cutter. And what I mean by that is James and Paula and I and other people are going to have to sit down and decide how we open up. Now, this memo is strictly for nursing homes. That is the sole guidance. I will say, typically when you get into something this big, some of that stuff trickles down to other facility types, and that would be part of the discussion. But the White House, CMS, the CDC all recognize nursing homes as a different environment. And so we're going to have to discuss how those phases fit, how we're going to survey that. But CMS is dedicated to paying for the testing.
So well, good. That really is
I can't tell you how, but I don't see it as a concern. I don't see it as a concern.
All right. Well, that's good.
Okay. I do have one more question, though.
Sure.
If we have somebody that's able to get up and go out of their room and they